In chapter 20, we'll be talking about white blood cell pathology. Specifically, we're going to talk about leukemias, which are tumors that arise within the bone marrow and involve blood, and lymphomas, which are tumors that predominantly involve lymph nodes. Later on in the course, they can eventually involve other organs as well. Okay, so let's turn to lymphoid neoplasms, talk about general definitions, characteristics, and classifications. For the leukemias, they're divided into two types, acute leukemia versus chronic leukemia. For the acute leukemia, by definition, you have to see blasts, blasts in the peripheral blood and blasts in the bone marrow. By definition, there has to be greater than 30% blasts in the bone marrow to make the diagnosis of acute leukemia. Acute leukemia also presents in a very quick fashion. The onset of symptoms occurs very rapidly. They tend to present with bone marrow problems, petechia, nosebleeds from having not enough platelets. They can have recurrent infections from not having a lot of neutrophils, and they're often anemic. For the chronic leukemias, those come on very slowly over a course of months. It tends to involve a tumor of mature appearing cells, either mature lymphocytes or mature myeloid cells. They look mature, but they're neoplastic. There are too many of them. Let's contrast that with lymphomas. For lymphomas, we're going to talk about non-Hodgkin's versus Hodgkin's. And hematopathologists are very smart people. They want to keep their jobs. It's great job security. So every couple of years, they change the lymphoma classification. So they keep their jobs. We all have to learn it again. And the latest one is called the revised European American classification of lymphoma. The other name for that is the REAL classification. And it basically divides the lymphomas up into B cell versus T cell neoplasms. So let's start with precursor B-cell and T-cell neoplasms. First one in your handout is ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. This is an acute leukemia. It usually occurs in children, usually ages 3 to 7 years of age. They often will present with nosebleed, bleeding from the gums, recurrent infections, anemia. The next thing you'll do is on peripheral blood smear, you'll see lots and lots of blasts. You'll then do a bone marrow biopsy, where again you'll see greater than 30% blasts. It basically replaces the normal marrow. Now, these blasts are very unique. They're lymphoblasts. And the way you prove that is you're going to have to use some special stains. The stains you want to use are TDT. TDT stands for terminal deoxytransferase. The other thing that this tumor will stain positive for is one of the CD markers. It's CD10. The other name for CD10 is CALA. CALA stands for Common ALL Antigen, CALA. Okay, last thing I want you to remember is that when you treat this tumor, the cells will be destroyed, but the tumor can hide out in certain locations. We call those sanctuary sites. The two places the tumor loves to hang out is in the brain. Because of the blood-brain barrier, chemotherapy can't get there. The other place in males is in the testes, because of the testes blood barrier. Last thing is, the tumor tends to be an early pre-B cell tumor. Okay, early pre-B cell ALL is the most common type. Okay, next in your handout is lymphoblastic lymphoma. This is a high-grade lymphoma. In fact, a good clue, anytime you hear the term blastic in the name, it's going to be high-grade. And lymphoblastic is no exception. It tends to be a T-cell tumor. It's very aggressive, and it will often kill patients. It tends to also occur in young patients, usually young males, and it presents usually with mediastinal masses. Remember, these are T-cells. T-cells have a tropism for the thymus. That's why the tumor commonly presents in the mediastinum. Okay, let's move on to peripheral B-cell neoplasms. For this, we should talk about CLL. Now, CLL is basically on a spectrum. CLL is a leukemia. It's within the blood. It's on a spectrum with a lymphoma called small lymphocytic lymphoma. That occurs within lymph nodes. So if it's in the blood, you call it CLL. If it's in lymph nodes, you call it SLL. Okay, look under the classification of CLL. To make the diagnosis, this is going to be a chronic disease, first of all. It usually occurs in older patients. When you look at the peripheral blood smear, there are going to be too many lymphocytes. They're going to have a lymphocytosis. But the lymphocytes appear mature. So how do you tell that they're not mature? You're going to have to use CD markers. And the thing that makes this tumor unique is it has B cell markers and T cell markers on the same cell. So it expresses a B cell marker, either CD19 or CD20, and a T cell marker, CD5. If you got both of those, you got your diagnosis. Okay, let's go down to peripheral blood findings. You will see a lymphocytosis. Most of the lymphocytes will look normal, but they're really tumor cells. So what happens when you make a blood smear is a lot of these tumor cells, they're fragile. They can burst. And you'll see on the blood smear what we call smudge cells. It's basically a tumor cell which has been lysed and fragmented. Okay, let's talk about some of the prognosis. CLL is the most common of the leukemias. It's also the most indolent. It occurs in elderly patients. At least the mean age is about 60 years of age. So the good news is most of these patients die with CLL rather than of it. In fact, most of the time you don't even treat it until it becomes symptomatic. Two other things I want you to remember about CLL is since it's a tumor of lymphocytes, lymphocytes can produce antibodies. And as a consequence, in about 10% of cases, you can produce antibodies against your own red cells and wind up with an autoimmune hemolytic anemia. Last thing I want you to remember is that CLL can transform into a worse disease. It usually transforms into a high-grade B-cell lymphoma. We call that Richter's transformation. And at that point, the prognosis becomes poor. Okay, let's talk about another leukemia called hairy cell leukemia. This is a pretty fun one. It occurs in older males. They present with a very large spleen and pancytopenia. So basically on peripheral blood smear, all you see are red cells. Most of the white cells are gone. When you do find a white cell, a lymphocyte, you'll notice that the cytoplasm has hairy projections. That's where it gets the name hairy cell leukemia. Okay. If you did a bone marrow biopsy, you'll see a proliferation of these hairy cells. The way you're going to prove it's hairy cell leukemia is it stains with TRAP stain. It's tartrate-resistant acid phosphatase. That is pathognomonic and diagnostic of hairy cell. Last thing is, how do you treat it? Well, we use a chemotherapeutic agent called 2-CDA. That's the treatment of choice. Okay, let's move on to some of the lymphomas. Let's talk about follicular lymphomas versus diffuse lymphomas. For the follicular lymphomas, these are the most common form of non-Hodgkin lymphoma in the United States. It tends to be a B-cell tumor. And the other thing the board loves to ask about is there's a characteristic translocation in this tumor. It's translocation 14-18. Remember what's on 14? It's the heavy chain of the immunoglobulin gene. What's on 18? The fountain of youth gene, BCL2. Okay, for the clinical features, tends to be an indolent tumor, but it is disseminated at the time of diagnosis. It's already spread whenever you make the diagnosis. Luckily, you don't usually need to treat it in many cases. If you do treat it, it doesn't usually respond because it's only slowly proliferating. One bad problem is over time, follicular lymphomas have a tendency to progress to diffuse lymphomas and take on a more aggressive prognosis. Okay, let's talk about diffuse lymphomas. By definition, these are worse tumors. They tend to destroy the architecture of the lymph node. They destroy the germinal centers. They destroy the follicles. They tend to also have a higher rate of leaving the lymph nodes, extranodal involvement. There's three locations that they love to go. Diffuse lymphomas love to involve the brain, especially in AIDS patients. They love to involve the GI tract, especially the stomach. And the last place in older males is they loves to go to the testes. That's the third place it likes to go. Okay, now since this is an aggressive tumor and is proliferating very quickly, diffuse tumors tend to respond to chemotherapy. So in some cases, you can actually cure these lymphomas. Okay, let's move on to Burkitt's lymphoma. This is a board favorite. You should know the other name for this is small non-Kleeve lymphoma. board loves it. If they give you the biopsy, they will describe the lymph node as having a starry skied appearance. That's pretty classic for the description for Burkitt's lymphoma. It also has a characteristic translocation. Remember that it's 8-14. 14 is the heavy chain of immunoglobulin. What's on 8? It's c-MYC. Please remember that oncogene, c-MYC. Now there are two forms. There's the African form, which is also called the endemic form. That usually occurs in kids. It usually involves the mandible or maxilla, and it's highly associated with Epstein-Barr virus. In the United States, we have the American form. It's also known as the non-endemic form. This form tends to involve the abdomen, and it's more common in AIDS patients. Okay, let's move on to plasma cell neoplasia, especially multiple myeloma. It's a five-star topic. Multiple myeloma is the most common primary tumor arising in the bone marrow of adults. On laboratory, remember plasma cells, they produce proteins, they produce immunoglobulins. So you'll see increased serum protein with a normal albumin component. The next thing you'll do when you see an elevated protein is you want to do a serum protein electrophoresis. If you remember what a serum protein electrophoresis looks like, you will always see one initial bump because most of the protein is formed by albumin. So the first bump is always albumin. The rest of the bumps are for immunoglobulin and other components. Those bumps are smaller. If you see another large spike, we call that an M spike. M stands for monoclonal. Okay, it indicates the presence of a monoclonal protein. The last thing is, some of these monoclonal proteins can actually escape through the urine. It's usually the light chains, and we call these Bench-Jones proteins. Let's talk about the histology now. For multiple myeloma, if you did a bone marrow biopsy, you will see sheets of plasma cells. It's not uncommon to have 20% of the bone marrow being composed of plasma cells. Okay, on peripheral blood smear, about the only finding you'll see is that the red cells, because of the immunoglobulins, tend to stick together, one on top of the next. They look like stacks of coins. We call that rouleau formation. Okay, one of the big complications is that the tumor tends to dissolve the bone away, and you'll form lytic lesions. And this is due to the tumor producing interleukin-6. The other term for interleukin-6 is osteoclastic activating factor, so the osteoclasts resorb the bone. And on skeletal survey, you'll see these punched out lytic lesions, very characteristic for this tumor. Now, what are some of the complications? Infection is a big complication. The bone marrow is being replaced, you've got abnormal plasma cells, you're at higher risk for developing infections. Another reason that you can have morbidity and mortality is you have renal disease. The light chains are very toxic to the tubules, and you can have renal failure. And finally, you can also develop amyloidosis, the AL type, because of all the light chains that are being produced. Okay, let's move on to lymphoplasmacytic lymphoma. This is a form of lymphoma which is somewhat similar to multiple myeloma. It's also similar to small lymphocytic lymphoma. Things I want you to remember is it's similar to multiple myeloma because you're going to have an M spike. The monoclonal protein this time is going to be an IgM protein, classic for this disease. But unlike multiple myeloma, you will not see lytic lesions. You will not see an increase in serum calcium. Last thing I want you to remember about this syndrome, Waldenström, is they can develop a hyperviscosity syndrome. The IgM is a very large molecule, it's a pentamer. As a consequence, they can develop hyperviscosity and they can develop thrombosis and infarction, especially in the brain. Okay, let's move on to T-cell neoplasms and natural killer cell tumors. In this category, there are two important ones. The first one is called adult T-cell leukemia lymphoma. This one, I want you to remember, it's associated with a virus, HTLV-1. It's also very common in island nations, especially in the Caribbean and in Japan. Now, this is a T-cell tumor. T-cells have a tropism for the mediastinum, but they also have a tropism for the skin, so it tends to present with a skin rash. They can also get enlarged lymph nodes, liver and spleen as well. Okay, poor prognosis is the final thing you should remember. Let's go on to mycosis fungoides. Again, this is a T-cell tumor, but this is a unique T-cell tumor. It tends to be limited to the skin. It's got a tropism for it. It tends to present with an erythematous rash, which will eventually develop into plaques and eventually into nodules. If you did a biopsy of the skin, you will see lymphocytes in the dermis and also lymphocytes proliferating up and into the epidermis. In fact, when you see collections of lymphocytes, we give it a special name. We call it Pautrier's microabscesses. Sort of a misnomer, because an abscess should have PMNs. This does not. This has malignant T cells. And final thing I want you to remember about mycosis fungoides is once the tumor actually invades the blood and starts to circulate, we call that Sézary's syndrome. It's just a different name for the disease spreading. Okay, let's move on to the second group of lymphomas called the Hodgkin's lymphomas or Hodgkin's disease. And let's contrast a Hodgkin's lymphoma from a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. What makes them different? Well, clinically, Hodgkin's disease will present often similar to an infection. You get B symptoms. You can present with a fever, night sweats, weight loss. Sounds a lot like TB, doesn't it? They can also spread by continuous spread. So if the lymph nodes here are involved, it moves to the next group, then to the next group in a continuous fashion. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma doesn't behave like that. It goes everywhere. The other thing that makes it different is there's usually no leukemic state. It doesn't usually involve the blood. It usually stays within lymph nodes. And finally, extranodal spread, very uncommon in Hodgkin's. Okay, let's talk about Hodgkin's disease. On the exam, for you to make the diagnosis of Hodgkin's disease, you gotta see a Reed-Sternberg cell. They can show you a picture of one, they can tell you that there is one, or they can describe one to you. So what does a Reed-Sternberg look like? Well, it's a very large cell. It's got two nuclei, which are sort of mirror images of each other. And each nuclei contains a very large, prominent nucleolus. The large nucleolus within this circle makes it look like an eye of an owl, sort of a descriptive term for it. Okay, to make the diagnosis, you gotta have a Reed-Sternberg cell. Another characteristic of Reed-Sternberg cells is on the surface they have very specific CD markers. They tend to stain positively with CD15 and CD30. Okay, let's look at the classification. There's lymphocyte predominant, mixed cellularity, lymphocyte depleted, and nodular sclerosing. The one I want you to triple star is nodular sclerosis. It's the most common type in life. It's the most common type on the exam. It's more common in females, and when they take the lymph node out, they're going to give you a description of it. They will tell you that the lymph node is divided into nodules by dense bands of sclerosis. That's why they call it nodular sclerosing Hodgkin's disease. The other thing that's unique is the Reed-Sternberg cell will have a very funny appearance. The Reed-Sternberg cell will look similar, but it will be within a space. We call that the lacunar variant of a Reed-Sternberg cell. Okay? Characteristic of nodular sclerosing type. Let's look at some of the clinical characteristics. For Hodgkin's disease, there's a bimodal distribution. There's one peak in the 20s and 30s, and then there's another peak over 50 years of age. So there's two peaks. Next thing I want you to remember is it tends to present as painless lymphadenopathy. Which lymph nodes are most characteristically involved? It tends to be in the midline. So the supraclavicular lymph nodes, the mediastinal lymph nodes, those are the most common sites. Okay, they also tend to have B symptoms, fever, night sweats, so forth. And finally, the prognosis is directly proportional to the degree of inflammation. So in the lymphocytic predominant, we have lots of lymphocytes coming in and very few Hodgkin cells, you're going to have a better prognosis. Lymphocyte depleted, where you have mostly Hodgkin cells, Reed-Sternberg cells, but very little inflammation, no lymphocytes, that's going to have the poorest prognosis. Last thing I want you to remember is, how do you treat Hodgkin's? Well, if it's localized, we can use radiotherapy. If it's not localized, we use chemotherapy. The other big thing I want you to remember is, since you're using radiation and chemotherapy on relatively young patients, they're at risk 10 or 15 years down the line of developing secondary malignancies, especially AML. Okay. And that brings us to the end of white blood cell pathology.